Hey.
That's what I have got for you. Hi.
So I'm excited to nerd out about today's topic, and we're going to be talking about a certain bundle of measurements. But I want to start by saying, like, we don't have good information. We don't have good information. We have a single size chart that's based on one population.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There is a lot of design that I don't want to say the word speculation, but you kind of have to have a lot of speculations about, like, what would be different? What would this be, right? In the same way that finding your perfect fit in a sweater is a bit of an experimental process, when we go on that process with you, it informs us about different bodies. So we're going to be talking about a type of trend that we see, or a type of shape that we see kind of commonly. But yeah, as Jen said, this is based on our experience as people and designers, and not really based on data that we don't really have. Yeah.
Yeah. We talk a lot about a body where a knitter might have a larger cup size or a larger bust size that a size chart predicts. And we talk about that a lot because that's a market that's very underserved. We know that when we start to talk about bigger bodies or more generous proportions, both in our industry and in the fashion industry in general, that set of proportions is really underserved. And because we are really focused on that, we haven't talked as much about some of the opposite concerns that come up in fit.
Yeah. So we're calling this an athletic build because it is a build that's common in people who are athletes, but that is really a shorthand. And if there were a way to describe it, that would be a more accurate picture, right? Then we would use a different word, because there are athletes of all different shapes, and there are people with this same build that would not consider themselves athletic at all. But it is probably the build you're thinking of when we say athletic build.
Or swimmer's build. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. So we know that, like, there's no guarantee that participating in any activity is going to result in any body change at all. We know that you can have what's typically referred to as an athlete's build or a swimmer's build, even if you're completely sedentary. And we know that different athletic practices are going to yield different patterns of body shape, right? So, so we're kind of prefacing this conversation with a lot of caveats, because anytime we talk about body stuff, there's a chance to get lost in the cracks, right?
Yeah. Yep. So when we decided we were going to talk about this, my first comment to Jen was like, is that my build? Do I have an athletic build? So I kind of want to start there, because this is an experience. This is my perspective on my own body, which is, like, in itself a slippery slope, right? Like, is our own perception of our body accurate? Right. A lot of times that's colored by biases that we have, et cetera. So what I know is that I am not a typical measure for my size in some places, and I am a typical measure for my size in other places. But I also know that when people on the outside are looking at me, a lot of times they say things to me like, that I have broad shoulders. This happened when we were in Maryland.
Yeah.
Someone said this, not in like a mean way, but we were talking about me needing a full bust adjustment and how I didn't really know that for a long time because I am kind of curvy. And so then having breasts that are full for my upper bust size kind of escapes. And when you have a smaller upper chest measurement, then the assumed cup size is like a size A. So actually a lot of people in those smaller sizes need full bust adjustments, with even if you only have like a B or a C cup anyway. So there's that. So we were talking about that, and someone was like, well, but you also have broad shoulders, so shouldn't you size to a full, the bigger full bust, because how do things fall off your shoulders? And like, while it wasn't said in an insulting way, this like broad shouldered comment, I don't like it, because it feels like it points to this like very masculine body type that I think I've like have implanted biases about, like being really feminine and not wanting to appear, whatever. Right. So there's all of these like weird gender things, I think, that come up when we talk about the athletic build anyway. But number one, my shoulder measurement is actually standard for my size in a size chart. So yeah, I don't even have
broad shoulders. Fall off your shoulders. Yeah. Right. That's not your lived experience. Yeah.
And so knowing that I have average shoulders, I also know that I appear like wider there than people think, but that is, and listeners may be able to guess at, my juicy bicep, my juicy upper arm measurements, really my juicy triceps make my shoulders appear broader because my arm is broader there. And I think that's what people are seeing when they make that comment. I don't know, but my arms being larger is in large part due to the fact that I have done a lot of upper body strength building in my life. So I feel like I dovetail. I'm like curvy for an athletic build, but a little more athletic than a common curvy build. And listeners and everyone, like, it's probably true that we all fall somewhere in the middle, and these archetypal bodies are not as common as we necessarily think. Right.
Yeah. Variation is the rule. Sitting solidly in one of these packs of measurements is not. But let's zoom out real quick and talk about why it's useful to define a pack of measurements anyway, right? Because the whole reason we want to do that is so that we can talk about the way a garment needs to change. And because we do often see that with some of these changes, they travel together, right? So when we're talking about an athletic build, and let's define what we're talking about in that context today, what we're typically talking about is somebody with a smaller than predicted bust cup for their torso size, and also generally a fairly well-muscled upper torso, right? And the measurements that are going to change there, we might see broader shoulders, we might see a broader mid-back, like in the lats, and we might see a steeper neck rise if that person has more well-developed traps. And it may also...
Neck rise and shoulder rise are the same thing, right?
Did I say neck rise? I should have said shoulder rise.
Okay. Well, I just wanted to make sure, because sometimes you're like, no. And then I'm like, ah, fuck.
Shoulder rise or shoulder drop.
A whole new thing to learn.
I'm touching my neck. Thank you. Thank you. The distance that our body changes in heights from our outer shoulder to our inner neck is going to be that neck rise or shoulder drop, depending on how you want to call it. But if we have a well-developed trap, that might be more steep, right? We might see a deeper rise there.
Right.
And sometimes that's also accompanied by a frame that is actually wider. So the shoulder bones might actually be wider because, of course, what comes first, a frame and a physique that's meant for a sport or the sport, right? So sometimes we will see that athletes that are better positioned for some of these sports may also have frame differences and not just musculature differences.
Right. Well, like the most successful basketball players probably have a frame that is meant for basketball, right?
Exactly. But you know what? We can see these proportions changing across the grade. None of these are proportions that we would see just in small people. So we can expect to see those same changes in both sides of the grade. And that's what I mean when I say we don't have a size chart for this.
Yeah. And it's really, we're not talking about people that are a certain size, because we see these shapes and this frame in all different sizes too. And I don't know if we mentioned upper arm, but I would also expect in a lot of cases with these builds that there would be a larger than predicted upper arm measurement too. And that there may be a lot of folks like me who feel like they are in that category and don't necessarily have a broader shoulder measurement, but well-muscled chest, more muscular upper arm is going to give the appearance of broader shoulders sometimes. So
it's, yeah, and even along if with you, that, go ahead.
I was going to say, even if you think you fit into this archetype really perfectly, like your measurements will tell you actually what's happening in your unique body too.
Yeah. And along with that broader mid back and that more muscled upper torso, we'll usually see a deeper armhole, a deeper arm sigh depth.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Okay. There you go. You were getting there all along.
I was getting there all along. So you've talked a lot on the pod about your measurements and how they differ from the standard. And yeah, if you were somebody who had a smaller cup size than predicted, I would say, yeah, this is a lot like your build. This is how you're built. But you do have that larger cup size than predicted for your upper chest. And so, yeah, you, like every human, are an outlier.
Yeah. I think that there's a lot of, you know, we all are hybrids because our bodies are a combination of what we do with them and what they are, right? Yeah. Without any outside influence. So we also see that our builds can change, but I will say that like in my frame, regardless of the size that I might be, these proportions are kind of always there and relate right. to each other in this way. So
shape
if I
rarely
went,
changes, yeah.
Right. If I went up a couple of sizes, I would likely still modify my garments in all of the same ways that I modify them now, just perhaps to different measurements. So I think we've talked a lot about armhole depth, and I think we've talked a lot about upper arm, but we can always talk more there. I think what I would find most interesting and what our listeners might be interested in is, you know, what to do in those cases when your upper bust measurement predicts a larger full bust than you have.
Yeah. So sometimes even at the smallest end of the size range, we will see that these knitters have an upper chest that is larger than the full bust. And sometimes people think that that's because we're a smaller circumference there. What it usually actually has to do with is the fact that upper chest is measured at a diagonal under the arm. So there's a hypotenuse. It's not the same. It's not an apples to oranges measurement. So even those knitters often will have some amount of cup size, although of course not always. But when we do see that musculature, when we do see an increased musculature volume in that upper torso, often that is also accompanied by some addition in pectoral musculature. So mm-hmm. I wouldn't normally expect that to actually be like a negative cone shape. But yeah, I hear from a lot of knitters who, for whatever reason, either they have this quote unquote athletic build or they just don't have the cup size that's predicted by the size chart, who are like, well, what do I do? Right. First of all, like, we can always make the we can always change the circumference of our garment. That's where I usually tell people to start is to fit top down, choose the size that fits well for your upper torso, everything mm-hmm. that happens from the underarms up, and then deal with what happens below. So choose that size, choose that width, choose that neck size, choose that armhole depth that's going to work for your upper chest measurements, and then figure out what change you'd like to make to the full bust. And that doesn't have to be taking an even amount off the front and back.
Right. So in some cases, you might want to leave more in the back than in the front, depending on your shape. In some cases, you might want to leave more in the front than the back.
Right.
I am thinking of like some of our in-person friends who I have seen that have really well-muscled backs. And in that case, you may need a little more circumference in the back than in the front if you wear a small cup size. But if you're in a more average cup size, you know, a larger cup size in the front, then you might still want that extra width in the front. You might have a more narrow back, right? That happens a lot of times too.
Yeah. I mean, even our standard fit model has a wider cross back than cross front mm-hmm. if you exclude considering the breasts. So it would not be unusual to need a little extra width there. So there are a couple different ways to accomplish these things. If we are making a change to the bust circumference, we would just look at how much we wanted to remove from there and calculate gauge and then change the shaping between the shoulders and the underarms to accomplish that and have fewer stitches. If we just want to make an adjustment to get a broader back, we might just change the shaping rate for the armhole and then take out that difference in the neck so that the whole cross back is wider, right? Everything that we do with knitting is just a grid of stitches and rows, and we can make whatever change we need to make.
Yeah. And something that will help a lot if tinkering with this part of the pattern is intimidating is to, one, either create your own progress chart if one is not included in the pattern you're using, or even to get some knitter's grid paper and draw the shape. Like I have some very large knitter's graph paper and I can draw the entire sweater, you know, stitch for stitch if I want to. And then that can often give me a better idea of like the shape I'm making and how I might want to edit that. I used that a lot as a newer designer when I was like unsure of what proportions I wanted to make garments.
Yeah. Or you can draw your schematic on a large piece of scrap paper and use a French curve, right? And then see what that measured out to at relative points. And I'll often
make a muslin.
You can make a muslin.
Something I've never done in my life.
And, you know, you can make custom graph paper. Do you ever make custom graph paper?
Uh-uh.
Yeah. So
you've told me that you do it in Excel, right?
Yeah, in Excel or Google Sheets if you want a free spreadsheet program. You just get the ratio of your stitches and then convert that to pixels. And then you have a graph paper that is custom. Because often, like, stockinette stitch is usually a 2-to-3 ratio, but, like, color work is closer to 1-to-1. Seed stitch is closer to 1-to-1. So there are different ratios.
Yeah, and sometimes when you're knitting like fingering weight, it's not the same, because I have found that if I knit fingering weight at a slightly looser gauge, that it has, for me, still a lot of rows, but not as many stitches.
Yeah, and plant fibers too. The stitches get real flat and wide.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm. So when you say the ratio, and I assume I know what this means, because this is what I do for like sleeve pickups, you're talking about dividing like the number of stitches per inch by the number of rows per inch?
Yep.
Or like creating that 2-to-3, 3-to-4, whatever it is.
That's right.
Okay.
Yep.
It's really finding your LCDs. Least common denominator.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. You can tell I have school-age children.
I was like, is it lowest common denominator. So you got me there.
I knew a nerd math thing that you didn't know.
The other thing to talk about here is that you might have a small bust and still want to make a bust adjustment. So once you've gotten that circumference that you want, that doesn't mean that you shouldn't address length. I see a lot of people who have smaller busts than normal. They go up a size and they still can benefit from that bust adjustment. I personally feel like almost anybody who has any breast at all can benefit from at least a half or a quarter inch. Often we won't write a size that small into our patterns. I especially am often working with a texture, and so I need to stick to row repeats. But if you're working in stockinette and you have removed extra material because your sweaters are normally too big, if you don't add back length, you may find that you no longer have room because your breasts have been stealing fabric from other places where your sweater has been oversized. So you will improve your fit by decreasing that bust circumference to match and get the ease that you want there. But then you should consider tossing in a short row or two just to run an experiment and see.
Yeah. Well, and take those vertical measurements that like you'll find in our patterns that recommend how to measure for your cup size, because yes, everything Jen is saying is true. You may benefit from changing your size. You may have a broader back, let's say, and you may be looking to change the circumference there, but that doesn't mean that you still have that same vertical measurement front to back of shoulder to underbust. So you want to compare those lengths, because there can be times where you really need that. I feel like I need to remeasure, because I was looking at myself in Tori the other day and I feel like my sample is riding up in the front a little bit, and I might need to go up a cup size. So
yeah,
life is always happening.
Or yeah, is Tori the same width in the front and back?
Yes.
And we've talked but I will about say this. Your breast shape, you might benefit from a little bit of extra width.
Right. I will say that I think I could have, maybe would have done more width because it's a mulberry silk, which is not as stretchy as wool at all in terms of like the way it knits and wears. It might stretch and then hold that stretch in the future, but in the meantime, it's not going to have that like elasticity. And my full bust is more than 4 inches larger than predicted for my size. And then there's only 2 inches positive ease built into this pattern. So yeah. I added an inch bust darts, but I don't really, I do feel like it's just too tight right in my boobs. So I probably could have done like a vertical bust dart in addition, or even I probably could have gone up a size for this pattern without it being a huge problem because it's got a fairly structured strap for a tank that like is not going to fall off. It's a high neck in the back.
Yeah.
So, but the size that I made is a very tidy fit and looks more polished in the upper body. So really, yeah. I think that a vertical bust dart to add that width for me there would have been good. But so speaking of vertical bust darts, I'm thinking that sometimes if someone has a smaller than predicted bust, they might want to do like a reverse vertical bust dart, right? And like you could subtract stitches here before the bust and then add them back in afterwards in the same like nearly invisible way, especially in something like a cardigan or like a top down raglan, where maybe instead of increasing at the neckline as much, maybe you spread out your neckline increases and then like increase along the side seams after. I think there's a way you could tinker with that to make the bust area. I don't know if I'd be excited
about creating a concave shape there. I think that really I would just adjust the width of the body.
Well, but this would – well, okay. I see what you're saying.
I'm not just there. You know, the whole – I would adjust the whole width.
I get it. I will concur, but I'm just being creative, you know? I'm just just throwing ideas out here.
Well, it's just a, you know, a good – like case study, right? Like, so if you did that, then you'd be removing width there only, but it would be wider everywhere else.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you felt like you really wanted, though, not to lose any width as you're coming into your underbust and your waist, you might want to remove that width sooner, like just before the bust, and just keep it removed, I guess, rather than – well, keep it removed and then start your shaping to fit waist and hips, right?
So, yeah. So we talk a lot about a compound curve, right? So in a set in sleeve, it looks like a J shape, right? That collar comes down or that underarm comes straight down and then it curves. Mm-hmm. And if we were going to change the circumference, the width of that J would be shallower, right? Because we would still have the same cross width. So when we talk about things like raglans, then we want to keep that same rapid increase, if not have more rapid increase here at the top, and we need less of it down here because the body is not changing circumference as rapidly in the lower part of the upper torso as other sizes. So normally we have what's called a compound shaping in a raglan where you decrease rapidly as you decrease from that full bust measurement to the upper torso circumference, and then even more rapidly as you decrease from the full shoulder width into the neck width. And so in a body where we have a more muscled upper torso, even if we were keeping the bust circumference the same, we might shift more of that increase up, right?
Okay,
so that we had less increases down below because we've got to go real quick from neck to shoulder.
Right.
And then if we were going to also remove bust, we would remove it from the bottom first. We would need fewer increases or decreases, depending on which way you're working. We'd need less shaping in the bottom part near the underarm.
Right. So if you're doing a raglan and it's bottom up, then you would, you know, add decreases in your hip shaping to make a smaller full bust circumference, or in your bust shaping, really, because you're going up from the hip. So you would add more decreases to have a smaller circumference, and then you would remove those fix your math by having fewer raglan decreases at the bottom of the raglan
accommodate. Yeah, you come into bust shaping with fewer stitches than you would normally. And right. Instead of keeping your shaping the same right away, you would decrease more slowly.
Mm-hmm. Until you reach the stitch count for the rest of your size and then follow the shaping as it is. If you were going the other way, top down raglan, you would work fewer increases as you approach the full bust. And then that's how you get your smaller circumference. Now in a set in sleeve, we're basically saying that you would the same. So you want the smaller circumference of the bust. So you could subtract those from the armhole decreases if you're working bottom up, or the armhole increases if you're working top down.
And I would leave that cast on or bind off for the flat portion of the underarm consistent.
The same. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The only place I'm thinking that that can get a little tricky is sometimes in the smallest sizes with like a drop shoulder design or something. There's just not a lot of decreases in the arm. Like sometimes there's only one or two.
Yeah, they might need to add some back as they approach the shoulder. That's right.
Okay, right. So you might not decrease at all. You might increase more in that top of the shoulder in a drop shoulder design. Wow, we just covered all of the constructions.
Well, we didn't talk about a yoke, right? A round yoke. We talked about a raglan yoke. But a round yoke, again, the round yoke, you're pretty locked into whatever happens in that wedge in the color work or the stitch patterning chart. But often there will be a row or two where you can make some adjustments in here, or some rows beneath where you can make some adjustments, and you would make those adjustments there in the bottom.
Yeah. Row. Yeah. They're trickier to change. So yeah, you would want to see if you could decrease a full pattern repeat before the pattern repeat starts, or decrease the extra after the pattern, I suppose. Did that make sense?
No. What? Yeah, I would try and make my stitch changes. So often a yoke sweater will have some kind of stitch count change between the neck and the yoke itself, mm-hmm. right? And then there'll be a chart that you follow, and the chart has baked in ratios that we can't really tinker with very much. Maybe you can. But then at the under the yoke, often there's another stitch count change. And so if there's not, then you're stuck with making those changes up here, and you may or may not like the fit that you get. A yoke sweater is the least flexible.
So that's what I'm saying. When I say the stitch pattern, I mean that whatever is happening in that yoke, whether it's lace or color work, it's made out of wedges. It's made out of a pattern that is a wedge. So you probably have a chart for that wedge, and you need to have a complete number of wedges in order for it to work. So that means that if you're tinkering with the stitch count before that wedge is worked, like if you're doing this bottom up, if you are able to decrease out a full wedge worth of stitches, then you can make it
work. You're going to have issues up here.
I mean, you would have to do a lot of math, but that would be the way.
Probably the best bet is to figure out a way to not make some of the increases that are in the bottom third of the wedge.
Okay, that would be smart.
And do that only in the wedges that will grow up to be front and back neck.
Oh, yeah, like maybe if you see, yeah, maybe there's a way to work one less row of the wedge in order to have a smaller stitch count.
Yeah.
Something like that. So or just remove a few of the increases from the sides of it.
Yeah. So if you've got that wedge like this, right? Down, you have increases 10 times, right? The lowest one. If you cannot make those increases and your pattern will still look good, do that some in the front and some in the back, but leave the sleeves alone. And I say the sleeves in the front and the back because each of those wedges will grow up to have a location here.
Right.
It'll hit your body in different places. So some of them become sleeve, some of them become body. And so I would try to make those increases in the front and back only and leave the sleeves alone.
Right. Okay. And now you see why we think circular yokes are the least fit friendly, because you're always locked into those patterns, those wedges, and it is hard to finesse around them.
The fit is the least consistent across the size range, but they're also tend to be the most fit agnostic. People expect the least amount of fit for them. So it might not be our preferred. There's no right or wrong. It just is it's the nature of this beast.
We just like things that we can tinker with.
Yeah, we do. We can't. And another way that people can take yoke sweaters and make them extremely flexible is just moving that arm bind off. So, you know, if you've got 10 repeats and it's supposed to be 4 in the front and, you know, 1 for each arm, make it 5 in the front and 1 for each arm, and suddenly your front is wider than your back, or switch it the other way. So you can just change the location of the sleeves, and it's just a circle. So if you've got a lot more breast, then you can assign more of those stitches to the front and more to the back pretty easily.
Okay, that makes sense. All right. Well, we have now thoroughly addressed, I think, what to do if your bust is smaller than predicted for your size. Do we have more to cover in this idea of like the athletic build archetype and how they might run into fit issues?
Yeah, I think that I would say for these knitters, making sure that your garment has that shoulder slope is going to be even more critical, and you may wish to work a few more either rows or short row turns, or however that's constructed. Or again, even if you're not making a change in your raglan, you may wish to shift some of those increases up to the top. These knitters are also going to really need to pay attention to the width of their shoulder caps, and may change the way that those are worked by adding a few more stitches to the bicep and then making those decreases again happen. This bind off becomes at the top of the cap, becomes narrower, so that they keep more of those stitches throughout the top of the cap. And then finally, it's going to be important for them to assess underarm depth and make sure that underarm depth works well for them, and that they have at least like 3/4 of an inch to an inch under the arm to move around.
Yeah. Yeah. That's all. I think we might be able to link, to past episodes where we talk. I know in actually episode 3, if you do not mind our old tech before our upgrades, episode 3, we talked a lot about armhole depth with my ruffle addendum. You're shaking your head. Are you saying you wouldn't go back and watch it?
No, I'm saying you're a wizard for remembering what episode it is. I still can't do that.
We spent how long planning our first 3 episodes?
And re-recording them. Now y'all get what you get. Yeah.
And I know we've talked about armhole depths in other places too. So, ideally, we're going to link to a couple other resources if you want to go really deep dive into armhole depth. But one of the things that's important to note, if you're tinkering with your armhole depth, then like Jen mentioned, you're going to change your rate of decrease in the sleeve cap for satin sleeve and in the whole raglan for a raglan. Yeah. / circular yoke. It is easy to add armhole depth to circular yoke design or any design. I think that's one of the simplest places to be able to adjust and get really good impact. If you're someone that needs a deeper armhole and you're not used to having that, I think you'll be really happy to start adding some of that length in.
Yeah. And as always, we recommend do an experiment, make a little tweak. If it feels too mathy and frustrating, run an experiment. See what you think.
Yeah.
Enjoy the knitting part and let go of the math and just play.
Yeah.
Did I tell you I added a piece to Body of Work?
What?
I added
a piece. You're not allowed to do that. Well, Body of Work is out now, by the way.
Oh my God, it will be.
When you're watching this.
Yeah.
That's all I was thinking today walking my dog. By the time this episode of the podcast airs, Body of Work will be out there.
I know that you have never delivered a child, but I will tell you that is the exact experience of waiting for your due date.
Well, there you go. Except wait, that I'm lying. Body of Work comes out tomorrow, October 5th. Tomorrow. See,
it's not waiting for your due date.
I just realized that just now, and I've been like for hours, like, this is great. This is the podcast episode after Body. Nope.
But at some point you're walking it around and you're like, well, even if it's not on time, 2 weeks from now, I will not be pregnant. 2 weeks from now, girl, we will not be pregnant with this body of work.
No, but we'll be newly pregnant with the next collection. That's right. Well,
I'm unwilling to carry that analogy any further.
That's fine. You all know that Jen and I have been working hard. Shout out to our members who are so sweet that they actually checked in on us and were like, are you working too hard? Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Kim. You're an angel. Jen and I will update y'all and say that we have reassessed our deadlines and our working to make sure we're taking good care of ourselves. So I'm acknowledging that because I think if you are someone that holds yourself to tight deadlines and high performance like we do, please make sure that you readjust your expectations regularly. If you don't know if you're asking too much of yourself, a good person to ask would be like your partner or your best friend or your child, all of whom tell me that I work too much.
No, I love that you're bringing this up because there's a lot of opacity in the industry. And I think we compare ourselves to each other. And we never really know how much work somebody is doing behind the scenes. All we see is what happens on the internet. Mm-hmm. And I love this recognition that this is not a sustainable pace. We've been creating way too much stuff recently. And we're about to come into what had better be a season of rest. Or we'll break. So, yeah.
No, I mean, it is.
It won't be like this, y'all.
Well, but we also, you know, we used our propensity for deadlines and planning to plan out well into the future now so that we have some of the security we are looking for while also making sure we have a lot of breathing room. So, you know, there are ways to make things work. Keep reevaluating, everyone. Let's be humans.
Yeah.
Only Patty is a robot. But Patty the robot, not Patty the human. Hi, Patty.
So tomorrow's the day.
What did you say, Mom? I said hi, Patty, to your mom. Hi, Patty. I assumed she was always watching.
I don't know. I never know. So yeah, tomorrow's the day. Body of work. Mm-hmm. One publication. Four garments. Two swatch projects.
A cowl. And what did you add?
Yeah. I added a written piece in the publication. Is what I mean. I added an article on technique.
Great.
Like on fit. Yeah.
Cool.
It just felt naked.
I'm excited to read it.
Without me being like, here's what you should do with your sweaters. But don't if you don't want to. Yeah.
Listen, Jen wrote a beautiful, beautiful poem that's really raw and personal. And so, of course, she's just like, there's not, my personality isn't in here because there's no hard, rigid lines.
Right. Too much water for me.
Well, but I love that because the collection includes these pieces that are meant to help with mastery of technique, like our swatch projects, our pouches. Mine is designed for tarot cards, but you can use it for any variety of things. And Jen's is really designed for your favorite school supplies or stationery supplies, but would also work beautifully for knitting notions or anything else, right? But these are meant to be like fun, easy, less intimidating projects where you can practice some of the skills that trip people up the most, like decreasing in lace, working in tarsha, learn to install a zipper. I just wrote a little bit about how fine finishing can seem so intimidating and some of these techniques, but, you know, didn't knitting seem just as intimidating when we started it? And then you learn that these fine finishing techniques are just oftentimes much more simple than they seem.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And we have a piece from a guest designer, Carol Chan, who writes a little bit about tackling difficult things too. I do want to take a quick moment and acknowledge the supporters so far that have sponsored this project, right? So thank you to Lisa and Andrea and Jen and Kelly and Sarah and Frankie and Julianne.
Thank you.
You know, we still have a few spots left. We won't by the time this is open, so there may be a few more names that appear in the credits for this publication. But, you know, the ability to create paid opportunities for knitters as models, as writers, but also to engage other artists in the field, like the photographer that we worked at, or other professionals, and to be able to support this type of this aspect of the economy, this heart-led, community-supported, like, to create something that's building something that matters to people, but also that financially supports the contributors. It's something that we were really able to do because of the community support that we receive through our coffees and through the memberships here. So I did just want to say that that means the world to both of us, I know. And I got really teary about it last night when I was writing my newsletter. So
I know. I can't. Did you already send your newsletter? I don't think I read it yet. Okay. That's why. Cool.
Mañana, tomorrow.
I can't wait to. Yeah. Thank you all so much. And of course, our YouTube members, our coffee members who support us more generally in this same kind of work. One of the founding principles of One Wild, as we've come together and we're an LLC now, y'all. We're official.
We're official.
We're, Jen and I are basically married. It's the most official paperwork I've ever had with anyone.
Oh my God.
Candace so better cool. Hurry up. Get a ring on this finger.
This is your first indefinite length contract to be in partnership with someone.
Exactly. Wow. And it changes the way I file my taxes.
It shouldn't.
Well, it changes the way One Wild files their taxes.
That's true. Yes. It has a tax implication for sure.
Yeah. You're like, it should not. Please don't tell me that. It's okay. I'm not the one who makes the filing my taxes decisions. I promise.
This is not my strong suit, even as a CPA. Like, tax was never my jam. It's fine.
I outsourced my incredibly data-driven mother, except that she's like too much of a goody two-shoes. And sometimes I have to be like, Mom, when I pay accountants, they tell me like, I don't have to do that. She's like, well, so somewhere in there. So I, well, whatever. That's why I never get audited. She's by the letter. She's by the letter. So anyway, one of the founding principles besides taxes for One Wild is really that, like, you know, we have to exist in this society with money. Jen and I need money. You know, we're humans. But as a business, we want to be investing and putting money into the community and into other ethical businesses, small owned businesses, people that, you know, deserve to be recognized for their work. So we are really intentional with the people that we bring on and people that we commission. And yeah, we don't ask people to do stuff for free for us or any of those things. Because it's about community. And so that carries through the way that we make our financial decisions, but also obviously in any of the other decisions about what we're featuring and what we're doing. So we want to know, you know, what kinds of dreams you might have for knitting collections or knitting publications in the future. If you have had a chance to see this collection or, you know, the publication, if you're watching this after it's been released, we would love to know what you think. We really want to hear from you. We want to create future visions with you that will celebrate this community that is really meaningful to both of us. And we really just see ourselves as like channels for this community to be able to share more. So our patterns are in the collection and we hope you love them. But the publication itself is just really special to me because it's a chance to, you know, offer something that's a lot bigger than myself.
Yeah. Also, it does some knitting culture anarchy in that it doesn't, like, we have pieces in there, but there are pieces from other people. Like, I feel like one of the things that annoys me about the knitting culture world is like, oh, the designers, right? Like, we're just people, you know, like, I have a really messy car. I'm just a person. Like, it's really
messy. Her car's not that messy.
It's disgusting.
I've been in way more disgusting cars.
It's, the most disgusting that a 40-year-old has ever had. It's great if you're 18. I'm nailing it for an 18-year-old. And I'm above the curve for a 16-year-old. But anyway, like, I don't know. I feel like there's just all this cultural, like, stuff where there's, like, this top-down hierarchy where we – there's all this, like, designer worship. Not us, but, like, other parts of the industry. And it just feels really important to be like, you know what? Like, the knitters are 50-50 collaborators, at least, in any garment that gets knit, right? The pattern is just a jumping off point. It's just an idea. It's just somebody has done some of the work for you. Like, the knitters are who make the industry, like, really shine. And who bring all of the creativity to all the finished objects we see. And so, like, I feel like we need to be hearing from them more, and they need to be platformed more. And so for me, it feels a little bit like, screw the man. Let's hear from the knitters.
I agree. I agree. And I like it. So, we do not have another publication planned at this moment, but we are always dreaming of new ways to support and foster and encourage community. So, yeah.
We'll see how
coming
it goes.
Up soon, you'll be able to see us at Wool and Folk and also at Sheep and Wool. I am not, like, official working either of these festivals I'm attending. You will likely be able to catch one of my sweaters in Camellia Fiber Company's booth, as long as it can get from photography to that booth in time. That's a little undecided. And
it'll be there.
I think it'll be there, and there'll be some collateral there. You'll also be able to find me in person during some of our meetups. But Jen, you are doing a more official appearance, correct?
That's right. I will be hanging out with Queen City Yarn with my study group sample, which will be in the second part of the garments that we're going to release in this collection, right? So two sweaters will be available for purchase and download right away. Two will be available to purchase as pre-order and ready to download on October 17th. So I will be there with my study group sample with Queen City Yarn. They have a really nice sport weight base that is absolutely perfect, and they've got really vibrant colors. And so I will be both at the preview event with them, and then I will also be in and out of their booth on Friday. So come see me.
I'm jealous you're going to the preview event.
I'm kind of excited. We'll see.
I'm too cheap to pay for my own ticket. Like, I will have dinner with Julie Robinson at the Airbnb.
That would be also a real treat.
It is.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to both events. It's probably not something I would have put in my own budget either, but I had the opportunity to do it, and I'm excited to do it. And then on Sunday, we're going to be at Sheep and Wool, right? And so we'll just be we're just going to kick it. Yeah. And we're going to have a meetup at Wool and Folk too. We're just waiting for a little more information on that. They changed venues. And so there's some things are up in the air.
Yeah. But One Wild has a website, onewilddesigns.com. So if you are most interested in things like knit-alongs and meetups and our collaborative work, make sure that you're on that newsletter, because that's the place. I'm unlikely to send a newsletter about the meetups to my list. We are probably going to send that information out in the One Wild newsletter. So we'll have that set up so that you'll get all of those details if you are attending. And let us know if you're attending either of these. I know a lot of folks are. I'm excited. I'm going to get my shots this week. And so I'll be ready to play with other dogs. You know, as one does.
No lepto for you.
No lepto over here, thank you.
We're gonna log off. Is that good?
I think we're good. This is a little shorter, but give us your questions. You know, it's harder for us to predict what your unique body needs. And this episode was meant as a resource to help you, you know, get closer and closer to your ideal fit. But we can help you best if we know what your problems are.
Yep. Yeah. And there will be a blog post linked in the comments on my website too that talks about this. So if you are not an audio learner or a visual learner, you can be a reader learner.
Yeah. All right. Well, cool. Here it comes. Here comes the bum bum. Bum,
bum,
bum, bum.
Happy knitting.
Happy knitting. Bye.